You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Michelle, it's great to be back with you and so thrilled to be talking about your new book, The Leadership Compass.
I am thrilled to be talking to you, Mel, as always. And yes, I'm very proud to be talking about my book again.
So we are in the midst of three episodes. We're doing three looks at some of the pillars from your book, The Leadership Compass. And today's pillar that we're going to talk about is emotional intelligence, EQ.
We are indeed.
I want you to talk to us about the three types of problems that women approach you with, and then talk to us about your WTF moment.
Okay, so when women come to me, there's typically three types. And listeners, I discovered design thinking when I was doing my MBA. So I've kind of, I'm not a religious person, but I think it might be my religion apart from swearing. So I really try to look at things through a design thinking lens, i.e. how do we design a world that works for the person who needs it to work? So I was thinking about these three kind of personas or these three avatars of women that would typically come to me, both when I was in corporate and then naturally doing what I'm doing now. The first woman would come to me and she would be typically at the beginning of her career and eager, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, just like I was, ambitious and really wanting to achieve success in her career and seeing climbing the leadership ladder as that indicator of success. So she would come to me and go, right, I want leadership. Show me how, put me in front of it, let me know. I want to learn everything. I want to learn everything there is about leadership. Cool. Okay. That's great. Awesome. And I love working with those ambitious women who are really keen to know. They know what they want. They may not know specifically what the role is, but they know they want to advance. Beautiful. Okay. So that's persona number one. Persona number two, she would come to me and go, holy crap, they've given me the leadership role. So she's been aspiring to leadership and probably has been a leader, an entry-level or, entry-level leader for some time. And she's just got her first big leadership gig, often a leader of leaders kind of role, so that sort of mid to senior manager role. And she's suddenly saying, I'm not a doer anymore and I'm also not a supervisor of the doers. I'm now a leader of other people who are leading other people. Holy crap, what do I do? Because I've wanted this for so long, now I have no idea, or I don't feel confident enough or credible enough to take on this role or be successful in this role. Cool. Okay, so great. Love to help you. Been there, done that. Now, this third type of woman is the woman who comes to me and there's usually a catalyst or two that has resulted in her coming to me. It'll be something like this. I've just been made redundant, or I've been sacked. I've got divorced. My kids have left home. I have changed jobs. I've turned 40, or insert milestone birthday. And I've woken up one day and gone, who the hell am I? What the hell do I want? I don't know that I want this thing that I always wanted, which is keeping advancing, whatever it may be. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I want. I don't really know what my values are because I've been looking around and looking after other people in my entire life for the last 20 years or so. And I just don't know who I am anymore or what I want. Help. So they're the three types of women that I really thought very, very long and hard about as I started to build my business. And yes, of course, there's some biographical elements in there, Mel, because I've been all three of those women, and particularly woman number three, because I had a WTF moment. In fact, I've had a number of WTF moments in my life, but the what the frig is going on and what the frig do I do about it? That woman number three was really the catalyst for a lot of things for me.
Yeah. So I'd love for you to just share a little bit about your WTF moment that happened around the time you turned 40 and maybe lead us from there into how you became more reflective on emotional intelligence.
So you're right, I had turned 40, but not just turned 40. Within the year that I turned 40, I left my employer of 15 years, Telstra. Voluntarily, I might add, I went, and listeners who've listened for a while, you know my backstory. I went, hey, it's time to venture out into the big bad world and see if I really am as good as people have been telling me that I am. So I'd left an organization that I had literally grown up in. I was in a new organization that I knew as a client, but suddenly I became the worker in that organization. I was responsible for a whole bunch of things that I'd really never been responsible for. I was stretched in a way that I'd never been stretched before. I'd also got divorced, and that had been a few years before, but divorced, new partnership, same-sex marriage. I had a whole bunch of life quakes that coalesced around a certain point in my life. And about 6 months after I turned 40, I got really sick. I got a bronchial thing. I had to spend a couple of weeks in bed, but my mental health really suffered. And coming out of that, I had been seeing my doctor, and long story short, I'd asked for a whole bunch of sleeping pills and things like that. She said, you're not getting the sleeping pills because you don't even know what makes you happy. Write down 5 things that make you happy. I couldn't write them down. I had a bit of a meltdown, a very big meltdown. She sent me to counseling. And that counseling appointment, that first counseling appointment, in fact, me even showing up to the counseling appointment for being very, very genuine was a big step for me. But it set me on the journey that I am still on, to really know myself a hell of a lot better than I had up until the time that I was 40, actually nearly 41 by that stage.
Michelle, talk to us a little bit about what a self-aware leader looks like.
Self-awareness is one component of EQ. And in my book, I talk about the fact that as part of this work that I did on myself, I started to get really serious about understanding myself. And because I am who I am, I wanted to get facts and data. So I started reading, and I started reading more on the work of Dr. Daniel Goleman, and little lights started to go off and things like that. But I realized that, yeah, there is a recipe, Mel, and there are components or there are quadrants around EQ. Yes, the first part is self-awareness. And that self-awareness is really stopping. And you know, listeners, I talk about stop, breathe, reflect. That stop, breathe, reflect is a tool to help you become more self-aware. In other words, where am I now? How do I feel? Where are those feelings coming from? Let me really think about where they're coming from. And how are those feelings left unchecked, how are they going to influence my behavior? Because left unchecked, that means I might be self-aware, but then I don't go into the next quadrant, which is around I'm not leading myself. So EQ leaders have the ability to understand themselves really well, but also to lead themselves as well as others and organizations. So self-awareness, hugely important. So understand myself, tune in. What are my thoughts and my feelings? And then how do those thoughts and feelings, how do I make sense of them? And then how, in making sense of them, how do I regulate my behavior so that I have a positive impact on those around me, whether it's my family, my friends, my colleagues, whatever it may be. And when you are in tune with that, and when you're really self-regulating, then you become much better at reading a room. So you're able to read other people and you're scanning the room and adjusting your approach. And I often say to my clients, one size doesn't fit all in anything. So the way you and I interact, Mel, if there was another person in the room, I wouldn't be interacting with that person necessarily the same way as I'm interacting with you. I'd be looking for the visual and the verbal cues to say, what do they need from me? So that high EQ leader is also good at relationship management, scanning the room. And really good speakers and facilitators have very good skills in this regard because they don't just dogmatically go through the program of events to deliver. They'll go, let me tune it up and tune it down, or breathe in and breathe out as the audience needs it. And that rests on a real ability to tap into empathy and curiosity, which are superpowers as far as I'm concerned. And that then creates a whole bunch of social skills and relationship management skills. So that's kind of the recipe in a nutshell, I suppose, in a very big nutshell, actually.
Yeah. So listeners, Michelle does deep dives into all of this in the book. So we're just pulling out some highlights for you today. Michelle, I wonder if you might have an example in your mind of a high EQ leader that you've known and seen, and maybe an example of how they demonstrated this high self-awareness.
The example I'm going to use is one of my CEO clients. And this is a really recent conversation, which was very, very useful. And he's helped review and craft the book and things like that. But I've worked with him for a number of years. And one of the things that he said to me, which really stood out, was approachability and busyness. So there's two words I want us to pull threads on. So you know, I have a real problem with the word busy when people say, how are you busy? No. Let's take this back. And one of the things that my client colleague said to me, he said, I hadn't really thought about the fact that when I'm really busy, visibly busy all the time, I become less approachable. So my busyness, i.e. walk fast, talk fast, go to always in this back meetings, talking about being in back-to-back meetings, blah, blah, blah. As a very small, the most senior leader in the organization, that gives an aura of unapproachability. Oh, you're too, I would have liked to have come and talked to you, but I know that you're so busy. So his response to being aware of that is that he said, I needed to adjust my behavior. So that's self-awareness. I became aware of a trait or a behavior of mine that wasn't necessarily having a positive impact. So my self-leadership says, okay, I've got to behave in a different way because I'm reading the room. No one's coming and talking to me. I ask for feedback. I don't get it, so on and so forth. So that's a very practical example, which we often think about EQ as that, oh, lovely, soft, fluffy kind of stuff. And feelings aren't fluffy. Feelings are real and feelings create behaviors. Behaviors create outcomes. So this was a person who said, I need to know what's going on in my business. I need to be approachable so that I get the feedback that I need to hear, not that I want to hear. And that means I've got to adjust my behavior. So that's a really good example of a high EQ leader and someone who learned to be a high EQ leader. Because like any other skill, these are skills that can be learned and with discipline practice, be mastered.
I love that example. So I want to just circle back and put a light on the fact that you said this person encouraged you to change your behavior. And it flies in the face a little bit of all of the authenticity talk that we hear today. I wonder if you would just comment a bit on that and how this person giving you this advice was helping you and how that change, it helped change your mindset and it didn't change who you are and it didn't make you show up any less authentically.
Absolutely not. And you and I've talked before about authentic. I think it's a bullshit word because yes, it gets bandied around. And when you really dig into it, what does it really mean? I can turn up as my authentic self at 5:30 in the morning. It's a pretty fucking horrible person that turns up because she's not happy, you know. But I'll use another term that I don't particularly like, which is servant leadership. I think it's another buzzword. But let's pull out the threads of what servant leadership and authenticity really mean. It means as a high EQ leader, I know when I'm at my best and I know when I'm not at my best. When I'm not at my best and if I don't have a choice, I need to really manage my behavior. So Mel, there are times when I need to be up and about at 5:30 in the morning. It might be because I have to get on a flight. Now, do I behave like an asshole to everyone around me because I hate being on that flight? Absolutely not. I've got to tell you, there are people who do. I regulate my emotions and I manage my behavior. So that's one very practical example of I'm still feeling grumpy because I don't like being awake at 5:30. But you know what? It's unfair to the others around me for me to behave in a way that indicates that. In a business sense, I want to talk about credibility because I'd rather you be credible than focus on being this authentic stuff. So a credible person, if someone's got street cred, and I remember one of my bosses saying to me, Michelle, we had a particularly difficult external stakeholder at the time. And he said, you got to generate cred with these dudes because they can sniff a bullshitter from a mile off. And I thought, okay, how do I demonstrate cred? I got to know my stuff. When I rock up to their environment, when they're already, and they were a little bit shitty with us most of the time, I got to know my stuff. I got to know their stuff. And the stuff means I got to know my business. I got to know their business, how we work together and what I'm going to do to solve the problems of both of our businesses, because I was the conciliator. So that's credibility. And I'd rather talk about that than being authentic. And underpinning that, Mel, was my ability to not feel frustrated at having to turn up to this stakeholders' environment, even when I knew that they were wrong. They were wrong, 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 and they were behaving badly. But I had to manage my emotions, not thump the table or yell or scream or engage in similar behaviours. So that's being credible, and that's being a high EQ leader that generates outcomes, positive outcomes for everyone around the table.
Yes. So that's, you're getting into the self-regulation bit some too here. So self-regulation and self-awareness are part of the self-mastery umbrella. I wonder, is there more that you want to say about being self-regulated as a leader?
Well, yeah. Ever worked for a leader where you go, wonder which Michelle I'm going to get today? You walk into the office or, you know, you jump onto the Zoom or whatever and you think, which one am I going to get today? Am I going to get the grumpy one, the volatile one, the friendly one, the empathetic one? Which version of Michelle am I going to get today? Now, I'm going to tell you, listeners, there would have been people in my dim dark past that they may be listening and go, yeah, I remember her being like that, because I was not self-regulating and I was not thinking about the impact my behaviour as a leader had on others. So this is about saying, again, you know, think about being on an aeroplane at 5:30 in the morning. It's no one else's fault. I've made that choice to be there, right? So that self-regulation, super duper important. Your team depends on you to show up for them. Your team depends on you to be a barrier to bullshit, including your own bullshit. Your team depends on you to be a bulldozer through bullshit. So when there's the corporate bullshit or whatever it is that's preventing you from being successful, your leader needs to bulldoze that out of the way. They depend on you. So a high EQ leader really understands that acutely and is able to show up credibly. Now, it doesn't mean that you become some kind of robot. You can be genuine. You can be vulnerable. You can be all of the things, but you don't let it dictate your behavior and have a poor impact on others. I went to a training course many, many years ago when I was at Telstra, and I do remember, and it was strategic communication. And I just remember that phrase, understand the impact your behavior has on others. Understand the impact your words have on others as a leader. Because being leaderly means you have to be regulating that. So if you've ever worked for one of those leaders where you don't know who's going to show up or you think, oh, we're going to have a table thumping today, that's someone who's got opportunity to work on their EQ skills.
Michelle, I want us to get to a couple other strength areas in this emotional intelligence discussion. Let's talk about reflective practice for a minute. What does your reflective practice look like, and why is a reflective practice important for leaders?
Thanks for asking, Mel, because reflective practice is super important to me, and I have both a tactical, just when I need it approach, and then a formal yearly approach. My tactical, just when I need it approach will be, because I'm tuned in, sometimes I will be having a day where I go, I am feeling really anxious. Now, I have clinical anxiety, so, and I manage that quite well, and part of managing that quite well is tuning in. I'm feeling anxious. Okay, what am I feeling anxious about? And I make some space right there and then, take 3 deep breaths. So I do box breathing to get myself a bit of equilibrium. And then I say, right, what's really going on for me now? What am I feeling anxious about? What do I need to tune into? And think and think. And I do make myself sit in that discomfort, because sometimes I'm like, oh, this is just ridiculous. I've got nothing to be anxious about. But when I sit for long enough, and sometimes it's only 10 minutes, or I say it out loud to a trusted person, typically my darling wife, Rhonda, I've got anxiety today. I don't really know why. Sometimes you need that outside in purpose. So that's one part. And that's to deal with an anxious moment. The other tactical thing is, okay, I really want to get in the zone. I've got a big week coming up. So I've got a big couple of weeks coming up. And I know that on Sunday, this Sunday coming up, I'm going to spend some time planning, but also saying, how do I need to show up? Where am I? What do I need to do? What are the things that are going to potentially derail me? And how do I manage them proactively? That's reflection. And it's me saying, I know the things that will derail me. What derails me? Being disorganized. So if I'm not planned and showing up ahead of time, and you know, if I've got a speaking gig, I'm always the nerdy one there first because I want to see the microphone and the setup and the, I know that being late or disorganized derails me. So I have to organize myself. So that's, those are very practical things. In a more formal way, which is my formal once a year process, sometimes twice a year, depending, is where am I now? What's got me here? What am I proud of? Where do I need to go? What still serves me and what no longer serves me? And some of the things that still serve me, I'm going to keep doing. The things that no longer serve me, I really need to engage with those and say, what no longer serves me? What behaviors, what actions, what people, work, whatever it may be, what no longer serves my purpose or who I want to be? And what am I going to do about that? But essentially, Mel, it's carving out time to stop, breathe and reflect. What's going on for me? How do I make sense? How do I take meaning from these thoughts and feelings that I'm having? And then adjust my behavior accordingly.
Love it. Okay, let's give our listeners one more nugget of wisdom from emotional intelligence. How about we talk about growth mindset?
So a growth mindset, I always refer to Professor Carol Dweck, who coined the phrase and has done the research. For me, growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, and we have both. All of us have both. There's no one person that has just an entirely growth mindset. But a growth mindset is, ooh, I've got an X to do next month with a new client. I've never done that before. I think I'll say no because I don't know how to do that and I might fail. I beg your pardon, that's a fixed mindset. A growth mindset is, this is really interesting. I know I'm not going to be very good the first time I do this, but when I practice and practice again, I'm going to get better and better and better. So a growth mindset, again, is very much about the EQ, high EQ leader, who is, they have self-mastery and they have self-awareness and self-mastery. So they're saying, I know I'm going to feel this way when a new thing comes up, when a new task or a new skill, whatever it may be, a new job. You know, some of us, hey, Mel, I want to promote you into this new leader of leaders role. Think about persona number two. I don't think I can do that. Yeah, you can. And we've got you back and we're going to surround you with support and what have you. And you are going to bump your nose, skin your knees and what have you. Okay, says Mel, I'm going to give it a go and I'm going to practice and I know that I'm going to fail at points and I know I'm going to feel a bit out of my depth, but I'm going to give it a crack and I'm going to keep practicing. Versus a fixed mindset, I'm not going to go for that because I don't think I'm good enough. Those are very binary kind of looks at it, Mel, but having a growth mindset is absolutely part of your toolkit of being a high EQ leader.
Yes. Okay, so we're talking about emotional intelligence as the overarching theme for this episode coming from your book, The Leadership Compass. So we've talked about, what does a high EQ leader look like? We've talked about your what the fuck moment that helped push you on this journey of developing your EQ in a very deep and meaningful way. And we've talked about growth mindset and your reflective practice, why all of these things are so important for leaders. And there's so much more wisdom in your book. You know, Michelle, some folks might see these topics here that we're talking about today a little bit touchy-feely, or maybe even put these things into the category of, well, that'd be nice to have in a leader, but they're not the big needs or must-haves. So speak to people out there about why these skills are critical for leaders, especially in the 21st century.
Well, they're critical. At the heart of this, and I'm going to quote Goleman, Dr. Goleman again, high EQ leaders have the ability to lead themselves, others, and organizations. And our world is not getting any less complex, folks. Here's a newsflash that you don't need a newsflash on. It is complex. It is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, and, you know, VUCA. And EQ is an absolutely critical component of managing in that consistently, constantly accelerating rate of change and ambiguity. And folks, those leaders with these high EQ skills, they are able to work with the humans around them. They are able to have empathy for them. They have curiosity. They are able to handle stress and pressure and be an adaptive leader. They really have the ability to inspire other people through their own actions. So we hear lots about being a role model. Role modeling high EQ inspires people to show up like you do. And they make better decisions because they're likely to be more collaborative and more inclusive. So in a really, really volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world of business, this is a must-have set of skills. And for those folks who think it's fluffy, I want you to think about a leader who just drives for outcomes and doesn't think about the people around them. And think about how shit it is to work for someone like that. One who doesn't care about you and doesn't care about getting the best out of you, and then say, is EQ really fluffy? No, I don't think so.
There you have it. The importance of EQ. And on the adjacent episodes, we're going to be talking about the other pillars from Michelle's book, BQ and SQ. So you'll definitely want to check those out. Michelle, where can listeners find all of the details about your book and what's going on with the launch?
The best way is to go to michelleredfern.com, and there's a little tab at the top or on the side if you're on your mobile called Books. And yes, there's only one book, but there will be another one. Maybe I'll do one about how EQ is not fluffy. I think there's got to be something in that. Or, as I said to my wife the other day, I think my next book should be called Advice for Life, Don't Be a Dick. So there you go.
Love it. Oh, we look forward to seeing whatever comes next, Michelle. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mel.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.